If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This special is Phil and Will are back, and today we are recapping episode number 9, season 4 of The Traitors US. We are going to be breaking down a banishment and a murder, Johnny Weir, Tara Lipinski, surviving the day. They're still around. But more importantly, I finally joined the party. If I get rid of the Henley part of this, Will, I'm finally like you. I can finally dress up like somebody. Isn't that exciting?
Yes. Yeah. You really dedicated yourself fully to the outfit, too.
It's the first time that I've actually had anything even remotely close. Trust me, I'm wearing faded blue jeans as well. So I really do have the Stephen Coletti look just on lockdown. If only my hair would cooperate a little bit more. That's really what's missing.
Your hair looks great, man. It doesn't look
like Stephen Coletti's.
You look pretty similar to Stephen Coletti. I'll give you that. And I am actually wearing this. I didn't have a sweater vest again. Still don't have it. Maybe I'll do a sweater vest because I have to retrieve it. Maybe I'll have to do that for the finale or something. This is the shirt that Rob wears next episode. I could tell from next time on.
I like this. Whoever's on next season from Survivor, we got to get a call ahead of time of like, what are your outfits so that we can start to plan our podcasting outfits. So we have something to look forward to, you know, so we can deliver on the level that is necessary for everybody else, but we'll have to see what happens here. I'm happy you had to go with the next time. You got to get up to Tahoe and you got to get your sweater vest.
I know. I would have also, he did wear a hooded sweatshirt with a zipper with no shirt on underneath. And I do have one of those also in Tahoe that I could have rocked, but I'm not.
But you are going to wear a shirt underneath, right? We'd like to keep our viewers.
No, I would not have worn. I would have committed just how I did the overalls without a shirt.
Damn. Well, I'm grateful that you're in LA right now, that you're not in Northern California. That's all I'm going to say. All right, let's dive in. So tonight we get Dorinda murdered, which I think is the argument we made last week, no?
Absolutely. We said it's like definitely Dorinda. We went through all the options and it was the only person that really made sense. I mean, I guess you could have tossed more in there. Maybe we said Kristen was an option. Did Kristen have the shield?
Kristen had the shield.
We said Kristen or Dorinda. And I think someone in the chat said, guys, Kristen has the shield. We're like, okay, well then it's Dorinda. And look at us. We were correct. And the traitors were correct. Because sometimes we say, this is who it has to be. This is the only correct play to make if you're a traitor, and they don't make that correct decision, and they murder someone like Colton, like last week.
Yeah.
So sometimes they don't nail it. So we should give Eric and Rob props for going with the correct decision. Dorinda was not going to – no one was going to think Dorinda was a traitor. She wasn't drawing any heat. She's not that good at sniffing out traitors. So it's like, I don't know. There was just a very – it was a very easy kill. She had no attention on herself, and you really weren't that close with her.
No, and it also really helped too, because you're sitting there and you're talking, this is the final housewife. So just get rid of the housewives. Like, you've already had so many housewives. The whole housewife turret really never really felt like it held all that much weight with anybody. Nobody was talking about that. We talked about last week how if you're Rob, to play this game correctly, you need to be getting rid of the women, like, because they're going to assume there's a male traitor that is left, considering three female traitors have been discovered. So you have to get rid of a woman. Dorinda's the one that's going to lead to the least heat. You can't get rid of Kristen. Getting rid of Mauro would be crazy. Tara and Johnny are too tight. You want to keep the heat on Johnny. And Natalie, honestly, like, we heard it a lot tonight. Natalie trusts Rob so implicitly that there's no reason for him to get rid of Natalie right now. Like, keep Natalie around. But tonight, I will say, going into next week,
yes,
Natalie is the murder. But starting off this episode with the options that were there for him, he needed Natalie for one more vote. Natalie, I think, is toast, though. I think she's gone in the first 5 minutes of next episode.
Yeah, usually we wait until the very end of the podcast after we've recapped the episode to be like, okay, well, who are they going to murder? I think we can maybe transition into that now, since you just brought Natalie up, and it does feel like there's no way Natalie survives. If you look at the four people on the shortlist, which we'll talk about that. I think the decision of who they put on the shortlist is far more interesting, and there's far more pitfalls in that than who they have to choose to murder. At least it's a way more ambiguous choice of what's right and what's wrong. Whereas I think here with Natalie out of these four, she is the clear and obvious option. You're not going to get rid of Johnny or Tara at this point. I mean, Rob has a great confessional at the end. They just revealed to everybody that they're besties for the resties. You hear that one before, Phil? Besties for the resties?
I have not, but I've heard it now.
Yes. So that is really suspicious. And I love their opening, you know, Tara's opening line of like, I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm 100% sure that Johnny is faithful. It's like, you cannot be. Like, you literally, yeah, that's just like part of the rules of the show is that you do not know who is a traitor. And traitors can lie. So it's like, how can we believe you, Tara? And that has a lot of suspicion. And we've never seen two people play as one, or like, we're going to defend each other and we're going to have each other's backs as faithfuls. It's very odd. It's very suspicious. I don't think it's a smart play. It's doing everything to help Rob and Eric at this point. So you cannot eliminate one of those people. There's just no way. And then, yeah, the other option is Kristen. And I think maybe there is, for at least Rob, there could be a reason to murder Kristen. However, he already revealed to Eric that Kristen was further pushing Eric's name after their confrontation in the kitchen after the round table. So it could have been a Candace situation where you just say, let's murder Kristen before she actually pushes your name. She was just confronting you slightly. She hasn't told your name to anybody else. I followed her. You're all good. But because Rob has put it out that, like, hey, she really actually brought your name up, they can't really murder Kristen. So Natalie I'd almost say, like, Natalie is officially dead at this point.
I think that's what's, you know, I'm looking at our live viewers right now, and we're much lower than we usually are. And especially the last 2 weeks with the traitor going home, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of dialogue going on behind the scenes. I mean, you know, you look at Rob's numbers, you look at our numbers, you look at all these other podcasts that do stuff. You really are seeing, like, high numbers for those last 2 weeks, or at least like consistent, because people were really excited about, let's get into this Candace versus Rob conversation. And the internet was crazy this whole last week over this. I think tonight's episode was pretty by the book. And I think Stephen Coletti going home doesn't really leave anybody with any type of, whoa, that's crazy. Because at the end of the day, if it wasn't going to be Johnny, it was going to be Stephen, and Stephen's barely been on this season. And then you're going into next week feeling like Natalie is the only choice. Because if Eric were to get rid of Kristen after Kristen approached him and went so hard at him saying, I'm starting to think there's something up here. You're not talking. You're not giving us anything. That's weird, because normally you say something. He brings up a good point. He says, normally I wait till the end, and this time I was just confused. Yeah, but we're all under the assumption that after back-to-back murders of traitors, there's probably a new recruitment. Don't start acting sketchy now. And so he is, and he's on Kristen's radar. But if he goes and messes up in this moment, then, like, you get rid of Kristen, you're screwed. Like, you're in a lot of trouble if you do that, I think, because everybody's going to say, when Kristen was going pretty hard at Eric, that's the screw up. I think you have to get through this vote, and you just have to trust the fact Rob has the dagger. Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't. But if you get rid of Natalie here, it takes heat off of both of you. And maybe you don't get Kristen back, but I still think all eyes are on Johnny after Steven was just found out to be a faithful.
Yes, I think, again, like, for Eric, it makes no sense. And there could have been an, again, there could have been an argument from Rob to say, look, I followed Kristen and she did not say your name at all. She's still on to Johnny and Tara. She confronted you one-on-one. It's not this big blow up or situation. And then Rob can pull what he pulled with Candace, and, you know, letting Candace kill Colton could have been very similar to letting Eric kill Kristen, and it really frames him. But it doesn't seem like Rob is playing this game right now to win as a sole trader. It seems like he authentically wants Eric to be by his side and win the game with Eric.
Let's bring this one up. Cass Burchard. I wonder if Rob chose Eric because he knew he couldn't handle the pressure and it would be obvious. I know you're saying that, and I think that's fair. If they get down to the final and there's four of them and there's two traders, they'll be fine to take the win. I don't think we're going to get a Suri versus Ari type situation. But do you think that part of Rob is kind of happy with Eric collapsing a little bit? Because still there's no pressure on Rob, but if Eric starts to fall apart and he ends up getting picked here, Rob was the mastermind. We'll talk about the challenge, everything. He was the mastermind of all of it. And I know that we're going to have listeners who are going to be in the comments being like, here we go again, Phil and Will, talking about how great Rob is doing. But like, I don't know what more Rob can do to make you like him except be part of a different franchise at this point. Like, that's the only thing he can do different. He has to somehow be on Housewives, and then you're going to love him. So as I'm watching this happen, you know, I feel like he's been masterminding it all. I do think he'd be okay with winning with Eric, but I don't think this is part of his master plan that Eric is blowing up and that Eric can't handle the pressure. I think this is just something that worked out in his favor, luckily.
Yes, I had mentioned last week, I think we talked through it, like your options for recruiting a trader, you could pick somebody you want to go with the end with and that you think you can work with, or you can pick somebody who is going to have immediate heat that can get banished. A male trader is now out of the game and like four traders gone. We know there was probably a recruitment, and then we can't really game the production of it all. We can't say, oh, well, there must have been this person or a person from this franchise or whoever. Eric, and I suggested Steven last week, they were in the middle of those kind of camps. It was like, look, if it works, it works. You're friends. You have a good working relationship. They're not going to throw you under the bus. They're probably not the type of person who's going to come after you. They're not going to turn around and be like, I'm going to frame Rob. I think the show tried to tease us a little bit with Eric's vote. Like, I didn't want to do a throwaway vote, but, and they drummed it up, and I don't know, Phil, if you felt this way, it was almost like they were wanted the audience, or they wanted you viewing to be like, oh my God, is he going to write Rob down? Like, yeah. That's what it kind of felt like. I don't think Eric would have been that person. I don't think Steven would have been that person. Johnny might have been. I think Johnny is super competitive and playing the game hard, but there was always that upside with Eric that if he works out, great. If he doesn't, if he flounders, that's just someone ahead of you in the pecking order from the faithful that they are going to banish the person you recruit ahead of you. And I think Eric taking heat tonight after just one day of being a traitor, like probably less than 24 hours of having that title. You know, I don't know how long it exactly takes to do the whole recruitment, the ultimatum and the robe and go to the turret and everything. But let's just say it's a day. And he already has heat from Kristen, who Kristen has not really been on to anybody, hasn't felt that confident. And for him to get called out, I mean, it goes to show that this is not easy. Going from being a faithful to a traitor is not easy. I don't think being a traitor at all is easy. You are completely lying with every word, every conversation, every look, every decision, what you're doing at breakfast. Like, you are completely and utterly not yourself. And some people just can't handle that. And they let it on that they are lying and they are playing the role of a traitor. And I think it, hey, if you don't like it, you don't like it. I think it makes Rob look even better that he is going so unsuspected. And I actually really enjoyed this episode. And I know you're looking at our live numbers. Someone in the comments said, well, Survivor's on tonight and it's an old episode, whatever. I'm not too cares about the numbers and how many people are listening or following along.
I get,
yes. But in terms of enjoying the actual show and talking about the show and the episode of the traitors, there's always excitement when a traitor is eliminated. It's a big deal. And I think sometimes we have, part of the traitors issue is when the traitors are going completely unopposed. It's like, oh, they're just walking to the end. The faithfuls are running around with their heads cut off. They're idiots. And then when traitors are too obvious and it's like, oh, well, they're obviously going to go next week. The cat's out of the bag. Like, it feels predictable. I thought tonight was the first episode in probably all season in just a really long time. Maybe I can't remember another one where there was not any hint at all of a traitor going home. Yet I was completely entertained this whole episode. Like, I thought this was so much fun. I thought the target kept moving. We had Johnny, Tara, and Steven, all three as viable people who can go home. I thought the challenge was really interesting. So especially we've gotten traitors out back-to-back weeks at this point. Like, it's okay we don't get a traitor out every episode. I still think you can be excited. I really had fun with this episode.
One of my favorite things about this show, they get a traitor back-to-back weeks. They don't get a traitor tonight, and Alan scolds them like they all just got 20s on the test.
That's part of the fun, though.
It's funny, but I'm saying, like, that is the enjoyment of this show, is you have gotten rid of three traitors by final nine, or really by final 10, because then there's a murder. You've gotten rid of three traitors by final 10, and Alan is scolding you after back-to-backs. Like, you just won back-to-back Super Bowls, but you didn't win the third one, Chiefs. So you guys are actually not a real franchise, like, dynasty. You guys suck. I just think that that's kind of funny. So I am, I get what you're saying. I wasn't necessarily bored by this in any way.
I just feel like it
was a very standard episode. The thing is, I'm loving Rob's game. So yes, I'm into this episode a lot.
I'm more invested because of how good Rob is. Like, Rob might be, he's probably out of the first four seasons of US Traders, he is my favorite character to watch in the show.
Yeah. And Alan said it was controversial this week. This week he said that he's the best trader. And then Sari actually came into the podcast last night, I think, where she was saying, no, he's playing a great game, all this, whatever, because everybody was like, well, what about Sari? But I know some other people were trying to say other people were better. And then Alan had also said Danielle was the worst, which just really made my heart flutter. I was so happy. I've never been more
joyful. You didn't say Candace was the worst, though, which is what you had said.
Candace last week. So I know I got a lot of shit for that.
Yeah, you did get a lot. I think Candace made one of the worst moves.
It was the worst week for a trader ever.
Yeah.
But she's not the worst trader of all.
She wasn't the worst trader. She went undetected. She went undetected for quite a long time. It seems like she had a lot of relationships with other faithfuls, a pretty good working relationship in the turd as well. But the one move, like one of the worst moves a trader has ever made that single-handedly got her eliminated, was throwing a vote at Rob's way when she could have,
and then arguing it so
Not get it together.
It was the worst week. And I know people say Dan, and people say, like, you can have your opinion. I love when people were coming at me last week being like, this is not grounded in fact. This is just opinion. I'm like, yeah, it is an opinion. Like, this is the beauty of reality TV. We're spewing
podcasts
at each other. Like that is exactly what we're doing. And then I got this whole thing about bias, which I was like, all right, clown, get out of here. It's like, I'm getting this whole thing about how we're biased. Like, I literally said last week's episode, if it's between a gamer and a non-gamer, I'm always going to side with the gamer. I am biased. Like, I'm acknowledging my bias.
Yeah. What's the bias?
Your bias is dudes you can dress like. That's essentially what your bias is.
Maybe.
So here's what I want to say.
Yeah, it's like you would think as a Survivor super fan with the Survivor podcast and obsessed with Survivor since I was 8 years old, you think my favorite, if I had any bias, my favorite Traitors player ever would be a Survivor contestant. And it's 100% not. It's Rob Roush.
Well, and this is what I want to say about Rob's game. And Turgenstein, stop commenting about Survivor in the chat. Nobody wants it right now. I'll be talking about Survivor later. Stop. Sorry. Like, I appreciate the support, but stop trying to change the conversation to Survivor. It's not helping. Okay. That's not good. That's not what people are here for. They're here for the traders. Let's talk traders. What I'm trying to get into the mindset of, as I'm looking at the numbers, as I'm looking at different things, I'm looking at Turgenstein saying, let's go watch the South Pacific finale, which, my God, it doesn't get any easier ever. But I love this. I really did. I actually love tonight's episode. I know I'm coming in and sounding like I'm not.
Good.
I'm trying to say.
It was awesome.
Let me say my point. I love this, but I'm trying to also get into the mind of the average Traders fan. I think this was probably like the worst episode ever for so many Traders fans, because I love the game that Rob is playing. And I think Rob has gamed the game of the Traders finally. And people will say, well, what about Sari? Sari came in, played on a half returning, half newbie season. Most of the newbies didn't even know who Sari was. Most of the people who were playing with Sari, who were, you know, celebrities, didn't even know who Sari was. And then you get into some of these other seasons. That was the only trader that we've seen win in the US version. No. So my thing is, Rob playing the game he is and being who he is driving a lot of Traders fans crazy. It's not what people want. But I think that Rob is playing the best game you can play as a trader. No one's looking at him. And that's why also when I say I think Candace played the worst game, and again, I corrected myself to it was the worst episode. But when I say that, she comes in with no target on her back as a housewife, just like Rob comes in with really no target on his back as a Love Island player. So when Ceri goes and wins as a Survivor player, you sit there and say, wow, that's impressive. The gamers always come in with a little bit bigger of a target on their back. We see them go out early all the time. Ian, Rob, this season, like we see it almost every single season. And so Candace having as little target on her and then kind of butchering last week's episode as badly as she did. Meanwhile, you have Rob who comes in with very little target. So it's hard to really, it's kind of like Amber winning All-Stars. It's like, you know, Sarah winning Game Changers. You know, there's not much of a target there, but he's playing it so perfectly. And I'm in awe of that because my biggest complaint with the traders through the first four seasons has been, it feels random. It feels like there's no reward for getting rid of a trader. It feels like it's just too much chaos. And yeah, it's fun and it's showy and it looks cool. But right now we're watching a trader play the game as well as a trader can play it. And this isn't a game that a Survivor Big Brother Challenge player can replicate next year. But this is a game that if you're a housewife, Bravo show type contestant, Johnny Weir, Mark, whatever, you can replicate this game if you're moving forward. And I think that's what's fascinating. I think that's what I'm enjoying so much about it.
Well, I think with any reality show, not just the traders, like you can't, it's hard to replicate anybody's game because the way people play these games are so personal. You're not, you know, reading lines. It's not a scripted TV show. There's not a certain correct way to play Survivor, play Big Brother, play the traders. And it's all about interpersonal relationships and it's about how you interact. And so you can't really say, I don't even think anyone can play a game like Rob's playing because Rob's the only one capable of being Rob. And that's why you get great players at these games. And that's why you get some really poor performances. People can't handle it. I mean, some people literally just can't handle lying and they get flustered and they get found out. We saw that with Donna. We might see that with Eric very soon. In that you just have to adapt your own personality to the role that you're given. And I think that's why Rob is so good. And I think that's why he has so many fans. At least I'm really enjoying him. Is he's not someone that you would expect to be so skilled at this. And he's so, so good. It seems like he's built so many good relationships. He has such a good demeanor. He doesn't get flustered. He just says these little things to make himself look like a faithful. Like when they're at the challenge today and they were explaining the rules, he just subtly goes to Natalie like, oh, I think we'll be able to use this to find some clues. Just little things like that that are so subtle. The way he handled being in the turret with two very loud housewives. I mean, even that was like a very impressive thing to survive through, you know, all his decisions and how he's recruited Eric and then how he shortlisted tonight, how he chose Tara's for every name of every question. Mm-hmm. Like he's just doing so many things correctly and you're not expecting it from like the dumb jock archetype from a dating show. So there's just, that's, I think why he, at least I'm gravitated towards him, is because he's not the person you would expect to succeed and he is absolutely thriving.
So let's throw up a couple comments here just to give the chat some, you know, attention. Ebony M, I like Rob's game. I didn't like this episode because the murder was predictable. The mission was a lackluster version of last year's and the upcoming murder mechanic looks lame. So we'll get into the mission because I do think, Will, I really liked what Rob did there. Brett Cott says Rob could get himself in trouble if he goes out of his way to help Eric. Turgenstein, Rob has the personality. Daryl Seymour, Rob has the winner edit. And then there was one here, Cass. Here we go, Cass Burchard. Everyone I know is watching is rooting for Rob, and I'm the only gamer super fan of the group also rooting for Rob.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not at this point? He's so likable. Like, he really is. Like, you want that guy to pull it off. And I think so many times with Survivor, the person who gets the most confessionals and is front running and is like the star, like you're Rick Devins or you're Jesse. I mean, those people didn't win, but you're kind of rooting for them not to win.
Yeah.
You're rooting for them to be like, oh no, you're hogging screen time. The show is making it obvious. The internet loves you. The show loves you. The casuals love you. Like, I'm not going to root for that. But like, even with that, I'm still rooting for, even if Rob is like cruising to a victory, I do not care how predictable predictable it is. I just want to see how he does it, because every episode he does something that is impressive and that is wise as a trader. So,
and let's bring up the best thing he did tonight. It was in this challenge, which I disagree with Ebony on this part. Daryl says, Rob is so smart, not putting both of them on the short list. Tara on every question. The guy is so great. I thought this challenge was really good. I think the one that Ebony is referring to is the one that was kind of like the go, like the fun house, which I thought was kind of.
No.
What was
Ebony's referring to the chess challenge where they have to move the pieces to match the answer. And the traders answered questions in the turret. And this is the one that got Carolyn. Carolyn was like, it's me, it's me. And I was like, why would you think you're the answer for that? And it ended up being Carolyn. And that pointed everything at her.
Yeah.
This is kind of the sequel to that season three challenge. We'll talk about the short list. I think, I don't know. I haven't fully decided whether it was good or not. But answering Tara for every question was absolutely the right move. So, like that is an incredible thing to do. And people could say, oh, the game was broken. How did they let Rob break the game? I don't even care if the game design is broken and they allow, like, they didn't see that happening or it led to, you know, a predictable answer every time. To see players find a creative solution to a problem is more fun than seeing them play the way the producers want to play. So when they're playing outside of how even production thought they would approach the situation of this challenge and just throw away answers. And, you know, in the end, people say, oh, it's throwing away the money. I don't care about the money. We've said that 100 times on this podcast. I like how the show acknowledges in confessionals now that Rob's like, well, I don't care about money. I want to care about keeping myself a secret, you know? Mm-hmm. But even the last question, they should have gotten $4,000. Everyone should have written Tara. They caught on. What's that?
It was 9 people, 500. Oh, it should have been 4,500. Johnny and Tara both did it wrong.
I thought it was 8.
No, it was 9.
Yeah, and then Johnny and Tara don't, and that leads to its own moment and the own suspicion of people that are now not following the pattern. Maybe because they were trying to not appear as traitors so that they weren't going to catch on to the pattern. Like, a lot came from Rob gaming the game, and sometimes when a contestant games a challenge like that and it's like you're not playing it how it's supposed to, this should have been in the rules. Instead of choosing a name each time, you had to pick from a whole wall of names. You can only use each name once. Like, there are ways to combat this, but this at least ended in a far more interesting outcome than if they had actually answered the questions honestly, because I don't think they were going to answer them in a way that was going to give up any information.
Well, and here's the thing, right? And again, early versions of Survivor, back when they used to change the challenge all the time, I always think of Yule in Cook Islands. It's one of the most iconic breakings of the challenge ever, where they're in the boats and they're supposed to line up the crosshairs with the target, and they're trying to line up the crosshairs with the target, but every time they drop the ball, it's missing. So Yule starts looking through the hole where the ball is, and as soon as he feels like it's good, he starts dropping the balls through the hole, and then they win and he breaks the challenge. And yeah, that's not so much of a strategic game that you're breaking, but I love watching the players figure it out, like you said, because even though it's now broken and you can't do this challenge again next season, at least not in the same capacity, we watched Rob think of that, so you can say, wow, Rob came up with that idea. Him and Eric figured out what to do with this and how they were going to navigate it. And it worked out perfectly in their favor. Because even though Eric's getting heat, Eric's not getting heat because of this. He's getting heat because of the round table. Rob's not getting heat from this at all. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. And I love watching great gameplay. Like, that's what I want to watch. I want to watch great gameplay. And I thought tonight that that was great gameplay. And I think when Johnny and Tara went at Rob and Mark on the last question, I think that was the moment that it was just, you know what, we have to put Johnny and Tara in there. I know that's probably the most confusing one on the short list, but I feel like they said, we have to put Johnny and Tara there because they're sticking out like sore thumbs. And if we really want to hammer home that the expectation is there's going to be at least one traitor on this short list, everybody's looking at Johnny and Tara right now. Let's just keep all of the heat on both of them and let everybody else figure it out.
Yeah, I think my biggest problem with the shortlist was actually leaving Mark off of it. And it wasn't so much the Johnny and Tara of it all.
Who would you have put Mark on for?
Maybe Kristen.
See, I think you want to keep the option. You got to kill a woman here.
Yeah, but you have Natalie and Tara already there.
Yes. No, I understand that, but you're limiting your choices and you're saying now I have to murder Natalie. Cause if you get rid of Tara, it's not going to make it look like it's Johnny. If you
let's break it down from like top level. So like Johnny and Tara, do they both need to be on there? Do you think it's better if both, none, or one is on there?
I think it's better if both, because I think there's so much heat on both of them. You're down to final nine. I think put them both on there and just let it go. You're picking on them at this point and nobody knows what's going on. All of the heat is on them. People are thinking Johnny's a traitor who recruited Tara. Just put them both on there and let people figure it out.
Okay. Yeah.
I think who you're playing with too, Will, you have to remember like who they're playing with isn't thinking at some high level of like, well, why would they both put themselves on there? Like everybody's so wary of Johnny. Yeah, I thought both
was maybe a little overkill. I don't know. Like, do you just put Tara on there and then you don't put Johnny on there or vice versa?
I think what also is interesting about this one, and I guess this is probably overthinking because Rob didn't get the information about Steven until after the challenge, I guess. But it saves Johnny too. Like it almost feels like, you know, you get through this vote, everybody still wants to vote out Johnny at final seven now.
Right.
So is it better to put him on the short list and make people say, well, let's take a shot on somebody else. We're all so confident it's going to be him at seven. And if he does get murdered, then we'll all sit here scratching our heads going, what the hell just happened? But if you're a traitor, it feels like it's a good thing to try to get him through nine.
Right. No, well, I don't think there's any world where Johnny's getting murdered. He said that so many times tonight, like, oh, I'm going to get murdered. I'm going to get murdered. It's like, why would the traitors murder you? It's honestly, it should draw heat to him as it's like, if anyone's paying attention, if you're faithful, why is Johnny saying I'm going to get murdered? The traitors absolutely want to keep you in. It almost feels a little like it's a little suspicious. Even though we know as an audience, he isn't a traitor. Why is he saying that? I just wonder if you put Johnny on and leave Tara out or vice versa, I think then you might get people being like, oh, one of them's in, one of them's out. Exactly that. Like putting both in, the way I would think about it, I think the most common assumption, we heard Natalie say this, is that, okay, let's think there's two traitors out of the nine of us and we have to shortlist four. Okay, there's going to be one traitor on, one traitor off. And if you're running with this narrative of Tara Johnny, why not put one in, one off? And that kind of fulfills that narrative. Whereas putting both almost feels like, oh, they're kind of getting framed. I don't know. It worked out that Steven was left off.
Well, sure. It's like Cass says here, it's perfect for this group of faithfuls who have just been checking off the list, putting Johnny and Tara. And I think what you said, Will, does make a lot of sense of, you know, maybe it is overkill. Maybe they're getting framed, but that's not how this group of faithfuls is thinking. That's not how Christian is thinking. That maybe Natalie is so dangerous right now because Natalie's starting to put pieces together and she's not onto Rob and she's not onto Eric, but you start hearing Natalie make a pitch against Steven and how quickly everybody gets on board with that pitch against Steven. And if you're Rob and Eric, you say, we got to get her out of here because she's actually convincing. But
that was so brilliant how when Rob votes, just like, well, Natalie did a really good job convincing me. Like, it's the little things. And then he comes out and he's like, oh, I guess it's not your fault, but like, damn, you like really convinced me. It's like,
yeah,
it is. He's so performative, but no one is catching on. Like, he is bullshitting everyone consistently. It really is impressive.
Yeah, and novelty says Will is thinking like a gamer. And you should remember, those who are left except for Natalie are not gamers. And Natalie is so in Rob's pocket right now. It doesn't matter. I will say this. I know there's going to piss off a lot of our fans because they are huge Natalie fans. Natalie's performance here is really kind of, it's really showcasing what her flaw with Survivor was and why she was so lucky to be on a Blood versus Water season. Because Natalie is so trusting. And we saw it in The Amazing Race too. And I know, Will, you haven't seen her seasons of Amazing Race, but she's so trusting. She does it with Jeremy and Winners at War. She does it with so many different people in San Juan del Sur, but in San Juan del Sur, it was easy because they were all grouped in pairs. So every time she was attaching to somebody, it was with a duo. I don't think Natalie's actually that good at reading people. I think Natalie is good at getting the troops together and saying, here's the plan. Let's go put it in action. That's her strength. But when it actually comes to reading people, I don't feel like her reads in any of her shows have actually been all that good. And I think it's on display here where she is you know, Tara is saying Johnny's 100% faithful. I know that. I guarantee you. I promise you. Natalie's almost saying the same thing for Rob at this point without saying it as explicitly. And she's got the wool pulled over her eyes big time right now.
I think she's got a Jack in the Box pulled over her eyes.
Yeah, I think she's done. I mean, she is totally, totally done.
Like, just don't see how she doesn't get murdered.
Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flour for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
So let me ask this for you, because you're the challenge guy, and this has been a big thing going around. I know Kelly Wentworth had put something out about it on her Instagram story, and I know people were asking this on X and in the chat, BCC chat. This challenge, look, you play thumbs up, seven up. You listen to the Shoes. You know, when you're in like middle school, you're listening to, or elementary school, you're listening to the Shoes to try to figure out who's the person who pushed your thumb down. Is their pants swishing? If they're wearing sweatpants, whatever. How is this designed where it's not giving away the two people who are going to, because it sounds creaky. It sounds whatever. That, I know that can be done in post, but explain it as basic as you can, because this is the magic of all of this. But everybody's sitting here going, how are they not hearing Rob? He's right there. So how are they not hearing?
I think there's two solutions to this, and I do believe that the Traitors as a show like doesn't want to have clues come out based on like, oh, I heard a little squeak. Like, that isn't interesting. That's not what the show is. Whoever's the best at tiptoeing and being quiet doesn't make you a skillful player. You can't interview on it. You can't tell a story about that. So anything physical, you know, they want, like, when they, even when they do the first selection of the Traitors in episode one, and Alan's walking around in the circle, like, I always think, I wonder if that's even real. Like, do they just have Alan walk around a bunch? I think Alan they can trust at this point. Like, he's legit. He's an actor. He's been on stages and sets all his life, and he's like a big part of the show, an executive producer and host. Okay, he can walk around a circle 15 times and tap three shoulders, and we can trust him not to mess that up. But with anything that has that big of magnitude where you can expose somebody's role in a game where the hidden roles are so paramount, like, you do not mess with this. You do not leave this up to chance. So this is either, there's two things happening here. Either the boxes are completely soundproof, which is not that hard to do. Soundproofing can be done in a bunch of different ways. I didn't quite look at these boxes on how they were designed, but
they looked cushioned.
They did have, it was the big, it depends how big the overlap of the lid is, because that's where you're going to get your soundproof. If it's really thin, then it might be harder to soundproof. So that is an option. But, you know, this show does a lot of trickery in magic and production superpowers here already. They don't sleep in a castle. They go to a hotel every night. Every shot you see of the traders walking with robes, like those are all done at a separate time. They're sequestering people, pulling people out of hotels to do interviews when they leave notes on chairs. Like there is a big team on the production side of the traders that is ensuring that there are no like loopholes in trying to figure out who is a trader if it's not done through proper ways where you can tell the story on TV. And so I have to imagine that if these aren't soundproofed, that what they're doing is they are pulling everybody out of their boxes each round, sequestering them, pulling out Rob and Eric, having them make their decision, filming them go back into their box. Rob and Eric then go back out to the box, go back out to be sequestered. They say, okay, bring everybody back. All nine people come back at once from their sequestered areas. They all get in their boxes together, and then we open up and continue the challenge. That is not that hard to do. It sounds like a lot. Why would you do all that just for a challenge? But giving the possibility that they could get caught while you're watching this challenge, I'm sure a lot of people at home, maybe some people listening, are like, oh my gosh, there's a squeak. Like, it's intense. It feels like they're sneaking around. This is why they love doing murders in plain sight. We've seen two already this season. That's why we're maybe doing a jack-in-the-box thing. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, whatever it is.
It adds suspense, but they're not going to risk the integrity of their entire season and game based on it. Like, they're not going to let Rob Roush lose because his box was randomly chosen in the center and it happened to be squeaky.
And he
like,
trips coming down the stairs.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. So it's either really well soundproof and they tested it over and over, which again, not that hard to do, or if they're really concerned and really taking it seriously, as they do in a lot of other facets of this show, they are pulling people out each round.
Yeah. Okay. Hey,
I don't know which one it is. I would be curious to talk to any of the producers and say, like, how did you pull that off to ensure that it was fair? Because it's like, again, it's not what the show's about. You like reading facial expressions, reading how people act, you know, how people vote, tracking tendencies and patterns. That's what this game's about. It's not about being like, wow, you have loud shoes today.
Yeah, exactly. And imagine if somebody in heels did that or something like that, right? I feel as though, yeah, that all makes sense. That's what I assumed as well. But I feel like it's nice to clear that stuff up because I know a lot of channels aren't going to cover that. They're not going to talk about that. They're not going to dive into that. I think that that's a fun little behind the scenes that we get to get from you, which is always nice. I mean, you know, that's the beauty of you having your little niche area there. And it's good.
Yeah. I mean, you can literally make anything happen, especially when you're not doing it live. Like you're able to cut these episodes, just pull them all out of the boxes, sequester them, bring Rob and Eric out, do their thing.
They were talking so loud. That was the funniest part for me. Rob and Eric were talking so loud. It was so blatant that there was no issue. like they were so loud.
They either weren't, people weren't in those boxes or they were just very well soundproofed.
Yeah. Okay. So that's that. So this challenge then, I enjoyed this. Like overall, I know Ebony had said she didn't. I thought overall this is a good challenge. I thought that everything about it was interesting. I thought the way it was broken was fun. Even now, like you can't do it again, but I thought that was good. Eric, now here's the other question though, and this is what my point was going to be, and I forgot that I was going to get there. Alan gives away that there's multiple traitors though by doing this challenge, does he not?
I guess he does, but I think everyone knows that at this point. And I think they're probably given their, so this is another like insight. This never will happen on, you'll never see it on shows, but like there, every rule has, or every show has a document called series rules. And I imagine in the series rules, it states like, if there are X number of people remaining, there is at least two traitors left. And it's probably every set. Like if there are nine people left in the game, there are at least two traitors left. They know that. And they maybe don't explicitly tell the audience that the faithfuls and that everyone playing knows that that's a rule. But, and they don't have, like, there's also, they can put in the rules, we can have as many traitors as we want, whenever we want, sign it. But it seems like the way Alan talks, like Alan came into the turret a couple episodes ago when it was just Candace and Rob and says, as per the rules, you have the option to recruit. So there are rules at what numbers happen for what things. We haven't seen them. I always say I would love to read them and love to see them. But and the players did not act at all shocked by this or surprised, like, oh my God, that confirms two. It's like, I think they're all operating that they're with the understanding that there are two. And Eric even says, which is funny, when he was talking to Maura, that like, yeah, there have to be two left.
Yeah, and then Daryl says here, Alan didn't say how many traders there were. One trader can pick a name. He says the traders will come out and discuss. He says that at the beginning of the challenge. So to me, that's letting everybody know there's multiple traders left in the game. And the reason why I ask it for this scenario is they've gotten two traders back-to-back. They've gotten three traders overall. We haven't seen it like that at this point. So that's why I just wanted to bring that up as a question, but it does seem like he gives it away. And maybe you're right. Maybe they all know anyway, so it doesn't make a difference. But Eric does say, I think there's two. And this was part of Eric starting to, you talked about this at the beginning. Being a trader from the start is tough, but you get into the mindset of, I just got to play the game. Going from faithful to trader and having to do it in a snap is so hard. And you saw it with Eric tonight. He had a really hard time when it was, we're going to murder somebody now. It's like, I was in my hotel room hanging out, and now I'm coming in, I think I'm going to get murdered. Instead, I'm getting recruited. I didn't know it was going to be Rob. I'm absolutely floored it's you. There's a lot of layers to that. And I think that he was genuinely flustered.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw Donna started as a trader, but like everyone starts the game as not a trader. They do get to meet each other. They do get their first interaction, do they have their first mission? No, they have their first like meet and greet, and they say their hellos, and then they go into the round table, and that's where it's decided. And everyone can immediately tell that something changed with Donna. And that seems to be happening with Eric here. That it's just, he's acting differently than he did. He's not acting consistently.
Yep. All right. So what else do we want to do here? Yeah. Trav Herod says, could it be the faithful have noise canceling earbuds in for this challenge?
No, because they could take them off.
Yeah. And that's the problem with a challenge like this. You could say, well, then the production team can make them put them back in. No, because if they hear it even for an inkling, the game broke.
And they're in, I guess you could say, okay, we have GoPros on you. We're going to assign each person to watch you. But like, even if it falls out accidentally, it's like, I think if I'm a trader's producer and producing that challenge, I'm pulling everyone out. You're only doing it for five questions. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And they have the team and the manpower and the tents probably. Like, I've had to do stuff where you sequester people, you have pop out tents outside and you have a produce, and it's you just pick spots. It's not that difficult.
Yeah. And so, okay. So all of that happens. What I've liked about the challenges this season, with the exception of maybe one or two, and it's why I like this one, there's been a purpose. The challenge has felt much more purposeful, whether it's getting a shield, whether it's getting the dagger, in this case, making the shortlist. There's been like the shortlist was happening early on too. There's been so much more happening in the challenges this season. And this was one where that was happening. The fact that it ends with the shortlist after everybody's been thrown off and you get to make those decisions was great. I personally, like we talked about Johnny and Tara. Natalie is 100% the right person to put in. And I think Kristen is also. I think Kristen and Natalie were the musts. I think if you were going to put somebody else in, it would have been over Johnny and Tara, but I understand why they went with Johnny and Tara just because the heat's on them. But Natalie being the last remaining gamer and being as aggressive as she is terrifying. And if you're Rob and you start to get a little heat on you because you're playing with a new trader too that hasn't done it before, you want to make sure that you have your closest ally being able to be murdered because then that makes you look great. And I think putting Kristen up there, Kristen's been shown to be sharp. I think Kristen's probably a name that would have come up last week. I think you want to be able to get Kristen and Natalie out because they are good at the game. I was saying tonight,
we both said last week, we're like that they should just murder Kristen. And then we're like, oh wait, we forgot that Kristen has a shield. So I guess we have to go with Dorinda.
But for me, if you get down a final five and it's Eric and Rob, it's Kristen, it's Mark, and it is, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank on the name. All right, who's left in the game?
It's Tara, Johnny.
It's not either of them. It's not Natalie. Oh, and Mora. That's who it is, Mora.
Oh, Mora.
Well, yeah, like going out of my brain. Mora, Rob, Eric, Kristen, Mark. Rob's winning. Eric might get got in that situation.
Sure. But
Rob is winning. Because those three are never going to come together to get rid of both Rob and Eric. And that's just a fact at that point. And I think that's the five you got to be rooted, trying to get to if you are Rob.
I think after this episode, I feel better about Rob winning after this episode than I do last episode.
Agreed.
I think Candace writing Rob's name down back to back, I mean, that still lingers. Someone that still is probably going to get brought up. Again, I still think that is like the main storyline of the back half of this season. Can Rob survive Candace's dying votes of just throwing his name out and at first saying it was a throwaway vote and then the very next time saying, no, actually, he's a traitor now? That doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. If they look at the actions of the traitors out of the entire season, someone could put that together. And I think Rob's best moves moving forward are just to eliminate people that could connect that dot. Kristen is very much one of those people. I think Natalie is also potentially one of those people. So I agree. Like those are, I think the short, again, my biggest problem with the short list is why did, like, did Tara and Mark, or did Tara and Johnny both need to be on it? It felt like it was just a little much. It was like a little too much of a frame job. But overall, I think leaving both of them off of it was fairly wise. Like, mm-hmm. just don't leave heat on your name. And a lot of traders would get cute and put, you know, both of them on the short list or maybe one of them on the short list.
I mean, at least
zero on the short list is ballsy.
Yeah, at least putting one. I think almost, I mean, my inclination was to do one. And then when Rob said, I'm going to do zero, I'm like, that is the right move. That's brilliant. It makes so much sense. Do you think, so this was a question from Ryan, who is the most likely to suspect Rob first? So I want to bring this up before I answer that. Do you think they're bringing the Seer back this season?
I don't know. It didn't play out very well last season.
Not at all.
It's not one of those things like, oh my God, it wasn't like the Chalice murder in plain sight. Like, we have to do that again. I think it was something that was on an international version of the show. They said, let's try it. It's something new. I think what the Chitters does well is it doesn't really stick to a format and it will just have little bits and like this here, we're going to shortlist at a challenge. Like, they can do these one-off format changes. They don't have to get married to it on an episode basis or even like we need to do that once a season. And they can kind of just pick their spots with these like weird decisions and eliminations. So I'd be fine if we don't get the Seer. I still don't think it would matter. I mean, that's probably the only way Rob loses. But even if someone gets the Seer role, picks Rob and is like, Rob's a traitor, I think that person ends up getting managed because they're like, no way. Like, Rob is not getting any suspicion. I mean, the name's brought up tonight. Tara, Johnny, Steven. The name brought up tonight after the roundtable was Eric's.
Like, and Ebony says it here. Eric would need to turn on Rob, I think, for him to lose. But I think at this point, if Eric turned on him, most people would look at Eric, not Rob. Like, he's right. The one with heat.
It would be, I think, very suspicious, though, if, like, Eric and Rob get into a similar battle between like how Candace and Rob were battling towards the end of their relationship and Candace throws everything at Rob and writes his name down and goes home and is a traitor. If that same thing goes down with Eric and they're beefing and Eric's dying vote is for Rob, that really could be damning. But I just don't see how that's going. I don't think Rob really ever wanted to write Candace. I don't think Rob had any ill intentions against Candace until Candace went out and wrote his name at the round table.
Yeah. And then started going at him in the next episode. I really think that's what happened. This is a great comment. Ebony, Tara would get the Seer and look at Johnny just to waste my time. I love that. I mean, the two of them are in La La Land. Cass Burchart, Rob reminds me of so much of JT. Everyone is just so blinded by his charm and doesn't think he could ever play the game. I think that's really good.
Comparison. Yeah, that's a very good comparison. It is very similar. But I even think Rob is playing the game harder than JT. Like, the decisions of the traders, I think, are more game heavy and more strategic than an older school season of Survivor, where JT just needs to like vote somebody out with an alliance and he's not deciding who to murder, who to shortlist, who to save, who to block, like all of these little mini decisions. And you don't have to lie the entire time. That's why I think it might even be more impressive where, I see the comparison with the charm, but it's like Rob is playing a more gamey game. He is lying every breath he breathes.
You just killed Turgenstein. You just said traitors was harder. He's dead. Turgenstein's done.
I think overall Survivor is probably a more strategic game holistically for all players competing. I think the faithful don't really have that much strategy. They get to write one person's name down at a round table out of a cast that starts with 23, and we're not even separating into tribes. So you have what, not even 5% of the power in who goes home. And that's what you can really objectively impact with the actual numbers and votes. That's nothing. Whereas the traders have a lot to do. In Survivor, everyone has, you know, everyone has a vote. Fewer people are going to tribal council, so it's like every vote's more impactful. I do think Survivor is probably more strategic, but if you're a trader, you have a lot to do. There's a lot of business to be taken care of.
So let's talk about this then, because I was saying what I think the ideal final five is, but let's say Natalie is going to get murdered, right? It's Natalie or Kristen. I think it has to be Natalie. I think it makes the most sense. Natalie goes. Some people be like, this is predictable. I think what's interesting about this, though, is this is like watching a movie where there's not necessarily going to be a twist, but you're watching a director and a writer who are so confident in the material that they have that you're just getting a expertly crafted film, right? Like, that's what it seems like right now. Like, we might not get any twists down the stretch, but I'm curious at this point to watch somebody play the dominant game. It's like watching Hatch back in season one. Hatch played the dominant game, and that was fun. But then when it happens again, you say, okay, that's enough. Let's move on. And so I know this is, again, we're going to get so much hate because it's like, you guys should have been saying this about Danielle and whoever. It's like, no, I'm going to say this about Rob, and that's the only one I'm going to say it about. But what Natalie goes. We're now down to final seven. Johnny, Tara, Maura, Rob, Eric, Kristen, Mark. They're not voting out Rob. Maybe they vote out Eric. Okay. And then Eric's a traitor. That's not good for him. Rob's in the final five. What version of the final five would he have to be in where he's the one getting banished at final five? Because they're going to banish somebody at final five. Where is Rob getting banished at final five?
He's not. No, Rob is totally clean.
He's getting to the four.
Well, especially he has the dagger. Like, he can use it at the next round table.
What did you think about him saying he had it tonight?
It was weird. I wasn't sure if that was public or just to Natalie. Because Natalie's like
whispered it.
Whoever has it, can they just say they have it? I was there. Because, like, just so we all know. Again, I said last week, like, I don't think it's a good idea for Rod to announce he has the dagger. And this, hey, maybe this comes back to bite him. If he did say it out loud, it's like, why aren't, if you announce you have the dagger and then you survive the night, I guess he's not on the short list. So he can confidently.
And that's what Natalie says. I'm the only one on the short list who is in that
room. So that was Natalie's point. Okay. So that's why Rob felt good about saying it. Whereas he couldn't say it any other week. Cause it's like, if you say you have two votes and you're a faithful, the traitors are just going to kill you.
Yeah, so he does say it. He does say it as like a whisper, but everybody has
I wasn't sure if everybody heard it or not.
But Natalie, that's a great move by Natalie to say that.
Also, doesn't Natalie know that Rob has the dagger? Because Natalie started with it.
Well, that's why she says it. That's why she says, tell them you have the dagger, because I'm the only one on the short list that was in the dagger group. Like, she knows that he has it.
I thought she was saying out loud, whoever has it, just come out.
No, she said it just to Rob because he's right there.
Yeah, it was a little weird because they were next to each other. Yeah.
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 That's interesting. I know Ebony says y'all should have a past trader player on for one episode. Maybe one day. One day.
Some point. I'm sure that will happen. Hey, what? It took us how many seasons to get a Survivor
player? I mean, we had Carolyn on. But she didn't talk traders, right? She talked.
Yeah, we could get Carolyn back for some traders chat. That's possible.
That is true. Maybe we'll get Rob. Dude. That would make our fans super happy. Whichever fans can't stand us already, who are just going through the motions of listening to this on a Thursday night, we get Rob on here. People would love that.
I would love that.
I know you would. I know you would. We got to start reaching out to Rob now. Anyway, I just, somebody had said in here, Daryl says, I think they're going to kill Tara. I just don't see it. Like,
you have to keep, you have to keep that pair in the game. It's so shady what they're doing.
It is guaranteed at that round table, no matter how much heat Eric gets, no matter how much heat anybody gets, Tara or Johnny go at the next one because it's down to seven and there's only one more banishment after that. You can't let them both get to final five because then it gets weird. And if the seer is in the game, whatever, you can't let them both get the final five. And I think a lot of people think about this show as, well, we're watching it. We have all the information. How would you play it if you had no information, if you're a faithful? Johnny and Tara look horrible right now. Absolutely horrible. So
And I think the best part about keeping both of them in, like, because let's say you kill Tara and then they banish Johnny, and Johnny's not a traitor and Johnny's a faithful. And then it's like, wait a second. Now they're both not options for the next round table. Whereas if you leave the pair in, they can't knock out the pair at one round table. So you don't want to help them knock out the pair. If they kill or if they banish Tara and she's not a traitor because she isn't, Johnny's still in the game and probably has the most heat heading into the next round and vice versa. If they banish Johnny. So like, don't do the faithful's work for them by taking out a person of that pair. Because if the other one's banished, then they have nowhere to look. Then it's like, okay, it's Mora, Mark, Kristen, Eric, yeah. Rob, Natalie. Like that's now they might look at Rob. They might start looking at those Candace votes. So
you're too close.
You have to keep that pair in the game.
Yeah, you're too close to the end. Like you said, they can't get rid of both. So you get rid of Natalie. They vote out Johnny. Johnny ends up being a faithful. Everybody is shocked, but you get to take the next shot. And your next shot can be at Kristen. Or it can be at, you know, let's say Kristen, because that's who's everybody's most on to. Now you're going into the final five and there's two of you. Like, they can't do anything about it if you keep both of them in going into final seven, there's nothing they can do about it. Like one of them's going to final five with you. Gonna still have heat. Both you and Eric are.
Rob's winning. It just depends if he wins as a sole trader.
Yeah. It would be shocking at this point. If Rob didn't win, that would be one of the least satisfying conclusions to a season of reality television in a very long time.
Yeah. Which is so insane. Because again, like if this was a Survivor season, everyone would be rooting against Rob.
Yeah.
And be like, this is obvious winner's edit. This is so boring. It's predictable. But like most media we watch, like if you look at like 95% of movies, any movie that's in theaters, it's like the good guy is going to kill the bad guy.
Yeah.
The couple is going to end up together. The superheroes are going to beat the supervillains. The people are going to survive the natural disaster. Like the good guys win. You go watch Top Gun. Is Tom Cruise going to let
spoilers on Maverick, buddy.
I know, but like, is he really not gonna end up saving the day and he's gonna die and just like fail the mission? There's just no world where you go into Top Gun being like, oh, I really hope Tom Cruise fails and that, you know, the U.S. goes to war and loses war. And like,
imagine a James Bond movie where James Bond dies. That would be insane.
That would actually be insane. But you get what I'm saying. And I think it's when we watch reality TV and we know that these aren't scripted stories. We know that this is actually happening, that there isn't no storybook ending, and that we want to see the surprising the fact that it's even on the table makes us yearn for it, that you can upend the power, that you can take the person who's in first place that should win, who's front running, and you can vote them out and you can steal their $1 million, and that there's not always a good winner. It doesn't end in the most predictable fashion. We love in unpredictability. That's why we watch sports, because it's not scripted. Anything can happen. That's why we like reality TV. Anything can happen. But if we're going to just look at a pure season of entertainment, I have no problem being like, yeah, Rob's winning. Let's watch him do it. Yeah, Tom Cruise is going to save the day, but let's go to the theater and see how Tom Cruise pulls it off. So I'm totally content with a predictable ending. With a character as rootable and as fun to watch as Rob Roush.
Yeah. All right, let's ask one last question then, and let's get out of here, because I do, for Turgenstein, have to go over, and me and McKenna are going to be talking about the South Pacific finale, talking about Ozzie and Coach right after this. So let's get this question.
How many podcasts are you doing this week?
This week with Patreon. With Patreon, Will, 18 podcasts.
18. And what, I'm on like 9 of those with you?
You honestly, this is like Will's best week, everybody. Will always wants credit, so we're going to give a quick round of applause for Will. He has actually had an incredibly good week. He deserves this crowd.
We did a rock draw, a Q&A over on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. We did the Rizzo thing.
Yep.
Everything you need to know about Riz God. We did hot takes last night. Yep. We did traders tonight.
And you're doing the 31 to 40 tomorrow.
You're doing the John McKenna thing tomorrow. I think Tegwith and I were recording an elevator pitch. I'm not sure when that comes out. So like, okay.
Yeah. Will had a good week. I mean, this is a good week, but I'm at 18 because I was recording a bunch of Patreon stuff and then all of these nightly episodes. So McKenna and I are going to be doing that. But here's the question from Patrick J. Stahl. Would Rob be good for Survivor?
Yeah.
I don't think he would be.
Oh, he'd be so good. Are you kidding me?
The problem on Survivor is
I think he gets voted out too early, and it's a bummer. But like he would be, if the fans love him, he would get eyeballs for the show.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be a good Survivor player.
If they ever did like a Reality Stars, you bring back six Survivor players, six Big Brother players, six Traitors players, like something like that. Like Rob would be great.
I think he'd be fun on the show, but I don't think he'd be that good at the show. I think he's playing a great Traitors game, but his game of like this aw shucks kind of guy, like, I don't know, I'm just doing it. It's not going to work on Survivor. Survivor, you have to be too involved.
I think it could work on Survivor. We see a lot of people play dumb on Survivor and win or do well, where it's like, oh, I didn't realize that guy was playing the game so hard. Remember, Q had to be like, Charlie's not even thinking about the game. I got to explain the game to Charlie. It's like Charlie was not letting on that he was like really strategizing and really playing hard. That was season 46. And Charlie is like the exact archetype of who gets cast of being a Survivor super fan, nerdy game bot player. Rob doesn't even fall into that archetype.
Keith Nail was this close to being a two-time winner. This close.
I don't know if he was, but I love Keith Nail.
This close. He definitely wins the first one. All right. Anyway, like this video. Subscribe to the channel. Please like the video. I know I say that one all the time. I try not to say it too much throughout the episodes, but it helps.
Oh, we're pretty bad at like the call to action thing.
I know. And it's hurting us. It is.
It hurts. Like we should do it more, but like it is annoying to like talk. I know it annoys people when they're listening or watching, but like, please.
Please. Yeah. We're begging. Please. Without doing too much. Please. Go check out the hot takes from Survivor yesterday. That was a really fun podcast.
That was a really fun one. We had some great takes.
Those were some good ones. Everybody's were hot except Blake's were just anger, and that was the best part.
Blake's were like not that. He's like production's lazy. Showmances are good. What else did he say? He just said like
winners get the most votes. but he rants, and that's what it's all about. So go check that out. McKenna and I. Road to 50 right after this South Pacific finale. Fun one to talk about. We did slay everyone, trust no one yesterday, martyr approach. And obviously, if it smells like rat, give it cheese. So we've done all those. And tomorrow night will be the Survivor Devil, an episode I haven't watched in a very long time from Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. I'm excited for that one. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Tomorrow night, Will is back, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. He's going to be on with John and McKenna celebrating Survivor seasons 31 through 40. And, you know, Will was there. Will was on the island for some of those seasons. So I'm sure, you know, Will has a fun little perspective that he's going to be able to shed some light on for everybody. So if you want to hear a cool behind the scenes, you know, not even necessarily behind the scenes, but just a different perspective of what those seasons were.
I don't know if I can go far behind the scenes, but.
You can't go behind the scenes. I'm trying to figure out how to word that. What are you going to talk about? Because you could talk about it in just a different way than we can, because you watched it. You're a fan, but you were also there.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to see how the conversation unfolds. I don't really, these are, you know, there's a lot of people doing these video essays and they crush it. Once Upon an Island and Peridium and Idled Out and Russell Muscle TV. But like, we don't plan out like here are structured, well-produced things. We just chat. So we'll see where the conversation takes us.
There you go. All right. So you guys can listen to that one. And McKenna and I will be doing, like I said, the Survivor Devil tomorrow. So much still going on. But thank you all so much for listening to this. I hope you all enjoyed this episode of The Traitors, our coverage of it, and we'll see you next time. Two weeks left. That's it.
That's right.
Right around the corner. Bye, everybody.
See ya.